What's up, everyone? How you doing? Welcome to another episode on the Luke Mind Power Podcast. Super excited for this episode in particular. I am with someone, I reckon this person is probably the smartest person I've ever had on the podcast. But I'm going to introduce Thorin to our podcast. His name's Thorin Stevens. I'm just going to read a little bit about him and then obviously introduce him. Thorin is a scientist. I've never had a scientist on the podcast. Data visionary, keynote speaker, pioneering the space where adaptive AI, human behavior, and biology intersect. He's the founder and CEO of Brain One, and that's about it. I'm going to let him introduce himself. So, hey, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, such a pleasure. Thank you so much, Luke.
Absolutely. So,
appreciate your work.
There's probably a lot more to you than what I just read, but I'm even just reading that scientist, AI, human behavior, biologist, like there's so much there going on. Where did this all start? And obviously, I'm guessing that this is just something that like you've just constantly built upon in terms of your own personal development, evolution.
Sure. Yeah. All the above. So my background's in molecular biology. I began my career working as a scientist in biotechnology, doing small molecule drug research. So we were the team and really the generation that sequenced the human genome. So this is in, you know, basically 2000, with the hope and anticipation that we would unlock new areas of drug discovery through genomics, and spent many years in small molecule drug therapeutics, working in biotech and looking at different model mechanisms of action, essentially to find new drugs to help humans.
Okay. Interesting. So what inspired you to become a biologist?
Yeah, that's a great question. I was always interested in science. I grew up on a horse farm. My family always had horses and was always just drawn to science at a pretty young age. I think I got a chemistry set when I was maybe 12 years old. And that was the impetus. And then I went to a boarding school in Steamboat Springs, Colorado, and I actually had a professor there that really changed my life and that really put me on.
So you said science, that was something that intrigued you or interested you. What was it specifically about science that kind of got your attention? You're like, oh my gosh, like, because, you know, I'll just think about myself for a moment. When I was at school, I couldn't figure out what I liked. I didn't really like much, to be honest. I was finding it quite difficult to actually like, I guess, what did I like? PDHPE, which was like sports. You know, it was yeah, like sure, that's what I liked, soccer, athletics. But other than that, like English, maths, all these other biology, science, all that stuff, I just didn't have a connection with. But yeah, what was it for you that like you were just like, oh my gosh, I'm so interested? What about your parents? Were your parents had something to do with like biology or science or something like that?
No, not really. Yeah, my mother's a chocolatier and my stepfather is a surgeon, equine surgeon. But yeah, I thought of science as a mechanism to understand the world, and you know, through biology and really biochemistry and then ultimately molecular biology, you know, really on a genetic and molecular level, what's happening in the body, how do genes get expressed? And so that was really always the driver, was just wanting to understand more. And so I went to school for that, was working towards a PhD, but decided to really jump into drug development. And that's when I basically began my career in biotechnology, doing small drug therapeutics, essentially small molecule.
Interesting. So, you know, I've had a few, I guess, people that I've interviewed, and I guess we are learning as we're evolving with how the system works in terms of people being diagnosed with whatever they're struggling with or whatever, and then getting prescribed certain drugs so that they can, I guess, help themselves or manage their life in a way.
Yeah.
Where does it cross the line where you're taking a drug that's really just a band-aid, but it's not fixing the problem? Like, you know, yeah, what's your take on that?
Yeah, so I think one of the missing areas in Western medicine is just the concept of prevention. So before a disease even progresses, how can you have the right components, lifestyle that actually prevent the disease? So I think that's a really big distinguishing factor between what we consider medicine 4.0 and, you know, the medicine of the future, really. A large part of my current research is around behavior. So taking a step back, when we think about the gene expression model, you have the concept of DNA and then RNA and then proteins, essentially. We are a collection of proteins, or what's called the proteome. in between your DNA and your proteome, who we are is essentially your gene expression. So you've heard the term epigenetics or epigenomics. There's also what's called the transcriptome. But epigenetics is really the regulation of your DNA, essentially, and what gets expressed. And so, interesting fact, roughly 30 to 60% of your DNA and its expression is dependent on the environment. And these are the small things, large things that you do, essentially, that can influence your gene expression. So we call these microhabits. You know, these are could be things like cold plunging, your time with family, connection, nature, but those really impact your life. And so while there's definitely a place for pharmaceuticals to help in the drug development process, I also think that there's a broader opportunity where, again, you can really focus on your behavior, the things that you do on a daily basis that also impact ultimately your gene expression and your health overall. So that's a large part of our current work.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting, though? I think now with the amount of information that's available, it's almost like, I guess there's still people out there that don't do their own research and that, you know, we do give the power, you know, or we have for a long time to a GP, for example, to a doctor to say, okay, this is my problem, fix me or find a solution for it. And if it's recommended that you take some sort of prescription, well, then we just believe that. But now we're getting to a point where it's like, you know, we have access to so much information and it's almost naive to just believe one resource in a way.
Sure. Yeah. That's also just as challenging because there's just as much as we have a tremendous amount of information, we also have disinformation and misinformation, you know, that we're also being flooded with. So I think that's also a massive challenge is who do you trust? You know,
yeah.
Who do you trust to find your information? That shifted a lot during COVID. And I think just a general distrust of science. So we're trying to help reinstill that with some of our current research. One example, you know, related to this conversation is the concept of dementia being preventable. And that's a relatively new hypothesis. There's a paper that I'll share with you. You can share with the audience. It's called the Lancet 2024. You could find it under that that term. And again, what it looks at, it's a meta-analysis, and it looks at the different types of behaviors people can follow to help them ultimately prevent dementia. And so one of our goals at Brain One is we've taken this paper, we run it through the AI, we have an editorial that anyone can read, and then ultimately a protocol that a human can follow. And this outlines 12 essentially microhabits, as we call them, but just small behavioral changes that can help people ultimately prevent dementia. Now, it doesn't help in all cases. You can have genetic predisposition. Alzheimer's is an example. If you have a genetic predisposition, you can't necessarily stop the onset of the disease, but what you can do is help support yourself in the symptoms. And so that's through behavior modifications. So we really believe as part of a holistic health premise, you know, that's a really good place to start.
Well, just curious, just going back, because I know you mentioned COVID, I'm just curious from someone in your position and your knowledge and all that kind of stuff, how did you manage that period?
Yeah. So I studied in infectious disease. I worked in infectious disease for many years with a number of, you know, pretty persistent fungal, different types of fungi, things like Candida, Aspergillus. I wasn't totally surprised that we had a pandemic. I think some of the surprises came around how we look to, you know, really improve the situation. We didn't do a great job in North America. Some of the science was sound, but some of it, you know, could have been, I think, you know, maybe debated a bit further. But it was a challenge because there was so much, again, misinformation coming out and people didn't really know what to believe, what to trust. So not totally surprising, but, you know, also potentially an opportunity. You know, it likely will not be the last pandemic that we see in our generation. So hopefully we have better controls in place next time.
And did you end up having taking the jab?
I did. So I was dating a nurse at the time and she gave me COVID. So that's the first time I got it. I'm a believer in vaccines for certain applications. And so I did not take the mRNA vaccine. I took the Johnson & Johnson version. And that was primarily to travel, but I did end up getting COVID twice. So I was, you know, pretty reassured that I had the proper antibodies. But
And after like all this information now, yeah, I mean, because there's obviously just so many people that are just like, it was the wrong decision, or a lot of people got sick from it. you know? I guess, I mean, I didn't personally take it. I was also kind of on the other side of like, you know, not agreeing, I guess, with having to do something that I'm being told to do that I don't want to do in a way.
Sure.
And I get it, you know, yeah, there's vaccines that are supposed to be really good for you and all that kind of stuff, or prevent you from getting certain diseases and stuff like that. But then again, the other part of it was like, you know, it was quite scary because all that was on the news was, this is how many people died today. And it was like constantly programming everyone in such a negative way that it's almost like if you didn't take the vaccine, you were going to die, you know? So I guess the point I'm trying to make is, what about your immune system? You know, like what's that for? If you, you know, it's like almost like we forgot that we have an immune system. We forgot that our body, you know, if we get sick, what happens? You know, your body all of a sudden loses its appetite and it starts fighting itself and trying to heal itself, you know? Yeah. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah. I mean, I think in some ways, these choices are very personal, first and foremost. I mean, I have a lot of friends with children, you know, and the vaccine debate is, it's one that's very heartfelt. We do have immune systems. So, you know, again, in some ways it could be better to actually get exposure and then actually build up the antibodies and, you know, handle it naturally. Of course, it depends, you know, it depends on things like age.
Yeah.
That could also be a factor. But very much a personal choice, you know, at the end of the day. And had many people in your same boat that didn't feel it was required. Yeah.
Yeah.
Challenge. Cool.
That was a good answer.
Oh, thank you.
You know, because like you weren't really swinging on each side. You were just kind of genuinely saying like, yeah, like, you know, everyone has different reasons or depending on their age or depending on like circumstances or whatever it is. And then even people with children, like, yeah, but I can see how there's a lot of confusion. And then all of a sudden it creates a lot of division in the world because some people are for it, some people are not for it. And it's almost like kind of like politics in a way. It's quite challenging because what's that?
Yeah. It got very political.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeez. Anyway, but yeah, I mean, tell us about Brain One, because obviously, you know, you've been through a pretty vast journey of research, of learning, of developing things. I mean, I want to talk about the benefits of whatever it is that you've created or what, you know, because obviously my podcast, the whole point of what I do is to empower people, is to inspire people, is for people to become healthier, better versions of themselves and thrive and live a life where you're actually stepping into your potential rather than constantly living in fear and limiting yourself because of your past, you know? So what have you developed and what are you creating that is benefiting people and I guess helping people live better lives?
Yeah. So two quick anecdotes. One, I live here in Colorado and I broke my clavicle 2.5 years ago. And I went to the number one orthopedic in the United States. And she said, your clavicle is broken. I was like, great, doctor. What's my healthcare recovery routine? And she threw me a sling. And so the recovery protocol, as we call them, but routine, same thing, was immobilization. So I wasn't supposed to basically move my arm. And that was pretty much it. I was like, this is it. And she's like, yep, see you in 6 weeks. And I went back to my network. I was just starting the concept of Brain One, where we believe really in more of a functional medicine approach, the whole human. And we have an amazing nutritionist on our team. And, you know, asked the team, is like, hey guys, broke my clavicle. What do you think? And they're like, bone broth, collagen. I was doing big bison stews and, you know, really focusing on nutrition. And then I also was doing some what's called PEMF, PEMF, which is essentially an electrical current that you pull through the bone. It stimulates bone regeneration. Fairly well researched, a little bit more exploratory. And long story short, I went back to the ortho and, you know, that was roughly only 4 weeks later. And the doctor does an x-ray and she's like, oh my gosh, your bone's completely healed. What have you been doing? And I was like, doctor, I focused on my nutrition. And she looks at me and she said, we never would have thought of that. And it was one of those moments where, you know, this is a top institution in the United States, and they never would have thought of nutrition as an integral part of recovery. And that was really the impetus of what has become Brain One and our focus on adaptive AI health. And so, yeah, that was a very, that was like an inflection point, essentially, as I was going down this road. And then I knew I wanted to do something initially focused in brain and nervous system. And then the concept of the protocol began to come up more and more. And at the time, I just started the company. This is maybe 6 months later. And then I was training for a triathlon. So we were actually doing a triathlon. This was in Malibu, California. I pulled together a team. And as I was training for the triathlon, I got the vision of we need to make health protocols more available to humans. And a health protocol is really just a series of steps. The way we define it in Brain One is you have micro habits. So these are small behavioral changes that you can make that really have incremental large impact on your life. And so it could be things like cold plunging. It could be red light therapy. It could be breath work. Connection are all essentially micro habits. And then they form into a protocol. And so when you're training for something like a triathlon, the your major exercises are swim, bike, run. And so you're following a protocol and you're essentially building on each of those tiers to get faster, stronger, you know, throughout your training. And then you're also optimizing your biology. And when I first started doing triathlons, we didn't have as many wearables. I'm currently wearing a Garmin. I wear Aura, Whoop. You know, we test all of these. We have over 300 integrations into Brain One. But it was the idea of starting to use data to optimize my biology. And that was another major inflection point kind of in my own development. And then further, you're also optimizing the different inputs. So things like hydration, carbohydrates, electrolytes, and you're doing this in real time. And especially for longer races, I've done Ironmans, actually did Ironman Wales. And in those longer distances, you know, you're doing this in real time. And so by having data, I was able to optimize my biology, and by following a protocol, I had a framework to be successful. And that's really the basis of what Brain One is in our parent company, Adaptive AI Health.One. It's that concept of using a protocol to basically optimize your health, ideally with data, fundamentally. And what we've seen is people are more successful when they have a foundation of structure to follow. And so just very simple, it's, you know, what are your micro habits? Could include exercise. And then ultimately, you know, what are your nutritional regimen? And then a level of measurement, essentially. And the measurement could be wearables, it could be biologics, you know, biomarkers, all types of things that, you know, we actually pull into the system today. But that's really the basic premise is, again, structure and then measurement and then optimization.
Yeah, it's really taking this technology to like Total Recall or these futuristic movies that we've watched, you know, in terms of like, I'm just imagining what you're saying. And I'm like, okay, if I'm wearing a watch that is basically reading my, you know, blood pressure, my heart rate, whatever else it can read, glucose levels, or I don't know whatever else it can take from being on my wrist, and sure. Then I'm wearing like these new glasses that they have from Meta, which is observing the food that I eat, for example, and then there's an app, and all of that information is being put into this app to data analyze every single thing that I'm doing every day to show me where I'm lacking or to show me where I can make improvements. Because when I think about my routine, I'm freaking busy, as I'm sure you've got a schedule and you're busy, and so is everybody else. But I think that's probably the biggest excuse for most people is why they don't get healthier or why they don't, you know, improve themselves, is because the structure is what you're saying. Like, imagine you had someone like a robot or just anyone, you had a personal assistant that was like taking data or taking a report of every single thing that you're doing to show you how it's affecting your actual like lifestyle or life.
Yeah, that's it. That's the basic premise. I don't know about everything, but you know, as much of the inputs as you can, you know, really put into the system without being too invasive and losing quality of life, you know. Certainly are people out there measuring literally everything you can imagine. You know, it's also important to meet people where they're at. And if, you know, most humans have maybe not even used a protocol or a program or a tracker. So it's also really important to meet them where they're at. But yeah, that's absolutely the basic premise. And that, you know, we'd love to learn what your routine is, Luke. You know, what do you do in your day-to-day? What does that look like? What's the structure? And it can be in an app, it can be an Excel spreadsheet, it could just be on a piece of paper. Now, it doesn't need to be fancy, but just starting with that and then analyzing that and then seeing, you know, what are the additional micro habits that you can do to improve, you know, an outcome such as sleep. You know, microbiome. Everyone I know, everyone we talk to is like, they have issues with sleep, anxiety, microbiome, like period. And so that's really a good foundation to start. And then if you want to do the more advanced neurological optimization, you know, once you have that foundation, you can focus on those things. But if you're not getting the right amount of sleep, then, you know, ultimately you're not going to be as neurologically optimized as you can be. So.
Yeah. I mean, like even recently even last night, for example, I went to bed about 10:30. I was definitely up like at 4, probably. I don't look at the time. Don't keep the time in my bedroom because I don't want to know what it is. It's just basically dark. And as long as it's dark, I know it's still night. And then as soon as I see, if I look outside and I see, because the blinds are covering the windows, as if I see it's light, then I'll be like, okay, so it must be early enough and I'll get up, you know. But I definitely didn't have a full sleep last night, nor did I probably have the full sleep the night before. But in terms of like business and lifestyle and routine and everything that's going on with my life at the moment, there's so much happening, you know, and it's like, and I'm not having a panic attack or, you know, feeling like shit, there's something wrong. You know, it's just, I'm alert because I've got a lot on my mind or my plate, I guess, you know?
Sure.
So yeah, it's definitely something to, I mean, look, we're definitely in the routine of having magnesium glycinate, awesome. I think it is, before bed. You know,
sure.
That's definitely
how long before bed.
Yeah, before bed. You know, that helps. And then also no phone in the bedroom as well. So we're read my wife journals. You know, so that's a very good habit. Definitely taking away the phones from the bedroom. But yeah, still, obviously, I'm busy as so busy right now. It's crazy, like just nonstop or every day. But yeah, so I mean, that's the only excuse I can find as to why I'm waking up in the middle of the night or tossing and turning from, you know, from time to time. Otherwise there's nothing else to look at.
Sure. Yeah, 100%. I mean, one thing I would potentially recommend would be a sleep tracker. My favorite is the least invasive. It's called the Oura Ring. I'm sure you're familiar with, and it's, you know, it's a very small ring on your finger, and then you have data around it. And then you know exactly what time you go to bed, what time you're waking up, and you can start to optimize essentially your behaviors around that. You'll also see if you have a glass of wine, how does that impact your, you know, essentially your ability to recover? And so I'm a big fan of data, you know, without being overpowering, but data really helps inform essentially these types of micro habits. And then what you can start to see is as you make these, you know, behavior changes, you know, it could be blackout curtains, could be the temperature of the room. And like you said, no phones in bed, massive fan, the quality of light before bed, are you on screens, all those pieces. And you can really begin to optimize that, you know, based on these small micro habits.
Yeah, we got red light before we go to bed.
Sure.
But what else was there? Yeah. I can't remember what I was going to say. It was something to do with, wearing the data, optimizing it. And it's like, yeah, our curtains are dark. And I guess it comes back to maybe, yeah, I mean, when you're managing life, I guess it's not, I can use my life as an example, like stress because of business or, you know, there's, you know, stuff that comes up, you know? So I think also maybe just preparation during the day for the things that you do, maybe like I do have a morning routine and, you know, not always get through it because some days are just fucking crazy and like there's so much shit to deal with, you know? So it's like, I'll get to the gym, but then I won't get to my meditation, for example, you know? So it's not always perfect, you know, but.
And that's okay though. It's also good to not be, you know, even if you have these protocols or the structure, things happen, you know, you wake up late, you don't sleep well, you know, you also, I really believe, need to listen to your body. Like that is absolutely number one. And even with the data, you know, I tell people this constantly, like you don't want to wake up in the morning and look at the phone or your, you know, wearable to see, you know, how did you sleep? You really want to check in with yourself, see how you feel, give some time and then look at the data because that can then start to inform how you're feeling about the day. Well, like, oh, my sleep score was a 67 and it's going to be horrible, you know, da, da, da. And then another thing that you mentioned too is, you know, you set your circadian regulation essentially in the first, you know, hours of your day. So getting things like direct sunlight, is very, very important. And that actually impacts your sleep, you know, 12 hours later relative to things like cortisol. So, you know, it's really important to just start to be aware when you start to work these things in. And you can't necessarily do all the things all the time, but, you know, again, at least having a structured framework. I'm also a big fan of like non-negotiables. You know, what are the things that you just make sure you always do? And they could start, you know, on your list is like, again, you know, things you're trying to do, these micro habits. And then as you do them more and more, then they become part and parcel. Like you said, no phones in the bedroom, big fan, you know, those small little things where most humans are on their phones till literally the time they fall asleep. But as you continue to build these small micro habits, then you really see the impact on, you know, the greater spectrum of your life. And that's when it starts to get really exciting.
You mentioned cold plunge.
Sure.
What about sauna?
I massive fan. I have one here at the house. We have a cold plunge and a sauna here at the house. I do hot Pilates actually on a regular basis.
Hot Pilates?
4 days a week. And
what's
It's a heated room where you do Pilates. We do mat Pilates with weights. And so I'm doing heavy weights, 50 pounders in a heated room. And it's 1 hour and it's the most concentrated workout I can get. And so I know no matter what, as busy as I am, you know, there's hot yoga. You're in the UK, I believe.
No, I'm in Poland at the moment.
You're in Poland. Okay. It may not be as prevalent there, but you know, you'll definitely find hot yoga, but same concept, you know, so you're in a room and you're sweating. And so normally I drink about 2 liters of water, again, weights, it's mat Pilates. And so that's actually more of my day-to-day sauna. Do have one here at the house. And I think that's one of the top longevity hacks you can absolutely do is that catharsis of pushing everything through your body again, with a massive amount of water in a short period of time. So yeah. Really, really big fan.
So basically the hot Pilates is the whole purpose of it is the fact that it forces you to sweat more.
100%. I go through 2 liters of water and I'm doing heavy weights. So I get my weight workout in, I get my sweat in, you know, there's some cardio in it, but also my core, you know, when I'm here in Colorado, I try to ski every day I possibly can. And what I found is actually the cross training of the Pilates helped me with my skiing and snowboarding, because again, it's all these, you know, smaller muscles throughout your body and you're strengthening your core. And actually I found I was getting hurt a lot less, pretty aggressive when I snowboard. So it really just helped everything really.
And why is it important to sweat?
Because you're pushing all those toxins out of your body, you know, ultimately, and otherwise you just have this accumulation in your cells and your tissues and the sweat is literally pushing it out on a regular basis. I don't know if it's exactly related, but I just did a lot of my biomarkers is about 2 years ago. And my testosterone was like through the charts to the point where my doctor is like, oh, are you on TRT, testosterone replacement? And I said, no, but you know, my testosterone numbers were so high. And I don't know exactly if it's from that, but I just believe it's from the broader lifestyle. And I really do believe that, you know, the sweat and the sauna is absolutely integral.
Yeah, but that's
a good thing, right?
It's a good thing that your testosterone is high or not?
Yeah, generally good. I mean, most men, you know, as they get older, it starts to wane and they're, you know, now going to replacement, you know, essentially therapies. Yep. Yeah. So.
Interesting. Yeah. So, you mentioned AI as well. How, obviously AI is pretty much taken over like the internet, you know, with accessibility of information and pretty much like, I mean, that was readily available to us back in 2020, 2015. I mean, YouTube, Google, I mean, there was obviously a lot of information out there and you could ask questions, you could get answers. But obviously right now, people are really taking advantage of it and creating options, I guess, for everything, you know, like whatever you want to create or whatever you want to search for, it's someone's done it, you know, so... How is AI, I guess, in the health space? How is it, you know, is it really like, as you mentioned, just data and giving people more options to go, okay, analyze this and then we can help you to like fix your, you know, micro habits and your health?
Yeah. I think one fairly terrifying trend that we've seen is that people are uploading everything they can into, you know, these LLMs. And you don't necessarily know what's being returned, how evidence-based it is relative to the recommendation. And I have a lot of very smart friends and family that are doing this, you know, for all types of health tips. And so I think there's a note of caution there, because you have to really understand, where's the data coming from? Are there citations? You know, can you truly track it back to whatever the evidence-based, ideally, approach would be to what it's recommending? And so, I think that's kind of one side of the curve that's, you know, a bit terrifying. I think on the other side of the curve, though, is that it can be very helpful in starting to integrate and amalgamate, you know, these massive amounts of data and giving you a summary that you can use to then impact your life. And, you know, what we're also seeing is humans are not getting what they need from their doctors. And so they don't know where to go. I mean, myself, I just, you know, went to the doctor a couple weeks ago, had a small surgery, and ultimately I heard nothing from the doctor. And like, got the test results, like not a phone call, you know, so what do you do? So it's now human nature. Humans are going to the LLMs, which I think can be okay. But again, just note of caution, you know, you have to really.
What do you think is causing the decline in our health?
Well, I think there's a lot of factors there. I would say, you know, the proliferation of things like microplastics. I am a big fan of living fragrance free. So like no fragrances.
Yeah, when I met my wife, stopped using perfume.
Awesome. Yeah. Endocrine disruption. Yeah. There's a new movie that just came out on Netflix. I'd really recommend looking at that talks about the microplastics in humans, the accumulation, and then the impacts on reproduction. So things like phthalates, you know, I mean, just it's a laundry list of these types of chemicals that we are exposed to on a daily basis. So environment, you know, all types of environment, contaminant essentially, which you can't ultimately, you know, you'll be subjected to some level of this stuff. And, you know, you can't live in a box and, you know, not be outside or doing the things. So it's just whatever you can do to limit, like literally every exposure I can to plastic, whether it's a fork, you know, whether it's a straw, you know, whether it's, you know, anything basically that could contaminate, you know, through microplastics or fragrances.
So you reckon that sucking a straw is contaminating your body?
There will be some level of microplastic transfer.
Because these fucking paper straws are annoying.
I mean, honestly, 100%. You know, they're a nightmare. Right. So you could use glass or you could just not use a straw.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even put that to the top of the list. That one's like a bit lower. You know, the way humans are really getting exposed to this stuff, it's things like takeout food containers. And then further, you're putting a hot soup into a plastic container, and then there's absolutely leakage out of that container, which again could be, you know, chemicals plus actual microplastics. So we're not going to get away from all of it. We're all exposed. You know, you can't live in a vacuum. You can do whatever you can to minimize that stuff. You know, you get the soup home. The second you get it home, you take it out of the plastic container, put it into a bowl. You know, just again, that kind of goes back to the non-negotiables. You know, what are your micro habits that you're doing on a daily basis? You know, just whatever you can do to minimize plastic exposure would be an example. Or again, you know, the endocrine disruption, especially with women. Women are getting their cycles earlier. They're now entering on the other side of the spectrum. They're entering, you know, perimenopause sooner. Fragrances, you know, and there's more and more data coming out about this, I think, but we're really going to find, you know, again, a direct correlation between endocrine disruption and fragrances as an example. So that's just another one. You know, do you need dryer sheets that smell like, you know, winter, spring, or, you know, whatever it is, or can you just not use dryer sheets, you know, as an example? So minimizing fragrances is another, I think, really important.
Yeah. I mean, I talk to my wife about this kind of stuff, but then I'm just like, okay, but how was, yeah, I mean, obviously the world is evolving. And I think back, you know, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years ago, you know, this kind of like people were still living, you know, everything was the way it was. You know, I grew up wearing perfumes and, you know, I used to sell perfumes, you know, so like going through duty free was, you know, spraying perfumes and smelling good, you know, but, yeah, it's interesting, you know, when I met my wife and she was, I actually bought her, I've never told anyone this, I actually bought her a perfume when the first time I met her. Awesome. And she was like, oh, thanks. And then I found out that she doesn't wear it. And I'm like, what?
She doesn't wear it, yeah.
You know, and then obviously, yeah, just, you know, I obviously stopped wearing, but I obviously thought like, oh shit, like how am I going to smell, you know?
Yeah.
But now I'm just like, it's interesting because now I'm like, yeah, I don't even need it. Like I smell fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with my BO, my body odor, you know? And then it's the sensitivity that you have because now, because you don't, like, no one, like, at home, we don't spray any freaking perfume or anything. Then when someone else has it, it's like, oh, shit, man, that's heavy, you know?
Sure. Yeah. And it's also okay, though, to wear cologne or perfume sometimes, you know? Like, yeah, it doesn't be absolutely never, but it's like, of when course, you're putting it on every single day, you know, I think that's a, you know, that can be a challenge and impact, essentially, you know, your pheromones, your endocrine. So, yeah, that would be
I guess it comes back to balance as well, right? Like, you know, doing too much of something is obviously, you know, going to have, can have some sort of effect, right?
Yeah, 100%. Balance is everything. Balance and moderation.
Mm,
you know, it's, I would also say we've seen a large, you know, shift within our food supplies and the types of food that we're eating. You know, an example is like children's candy, you know, especially in the United States. It's probably not as bad in Poland, but, you know, we used to get, you know, on Halloween, you would go out and get candy.
Yep.
That candy, I mean, nowadays, I think it was Hershey's just announced they're like phasing out cocoa in their chocolate-based products, which is absolutely like absurd. But it's what's happening because, you know, they're ultimately trying to optimize for the margin dollar. And so they're just looking for cheaper products. So like, you know, when you taste this candy now, it's not chocolate, it's barely peanut butter, you know, it's more synthetic ingredients.
Yeah,
and so one app that I use on a regular basis is called Yuka. It's Y-U-K-A. And you basically, it will change how you buy your food. And when you go into the store, you just scan anything. It could be, you know, your almond milk and you're like, oh, I'm buying organic almond milk. It's better than dairy. And then you scan it and all the other molecules that are in that almond milk. And what it does is it rates the additives by essentially their profile and how toxic they are. And it tells you. And something like almond milk or even buying like, you know, it is incredible what's put into these products now. And that didn't exist 30, 40 years ago when we were kids. You know, that's like a big shift. Fortunate that, you know, things are being optimized for every dollar. So you just have to really look at what you're putting on your body, in your body, because it's not always in your best interest.
Could it also be the placebo effect that, you know, if you believe what you're drinking is healthy, it's healthy?
Potentially, you know, unless it has a bunch of PFAs in it. You know, I was just reading last night, you know, one of the beverages that we drink, you know, we try to do zero sugar as much as possible, but there's a kombucha brand. And I literally just saw last night, this kombucha brand, which you think is healthy, had PFAs that were through the roof, you know, because again, the water source that they were using to then make the kombucha, you know, was contaminated, which is also true. So the fact that they're not filtering their water, it's all absurd. So I absolutely believe in the placebo effect, but you know, you really have to look at, you know, the full spectrum of where you're getting your foods, you know, to the best that you can, you know, and sometimes you just can't. Sometimes it's okay to eat a hamburger from In-N-Out or whatever it is, you know. Again, I think it's that moderation piece, but helping develop, you know, these core principles, these micro habits ultimately will help sustain, you know, overall.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Thorin, thank you so much for jumping on and spending this time with us and talking about your story and everything that you've shared. Definitely is very insightful, you know, because obviously our health is something that I think many people struggle with and are looking. I think the most important thing now, especially with AI and accessibility of information, you know, people are looking for answers, you know what I mean? So yeah, I think what you shared is awesome because, yeah, people can definitely find you as a resource as well. So I'll be sure to share your resources and websites and all that kind of stuff in the description below as well, guys. So please go and check Thorin out. I know that you'll probably find some more stuff on his pages. But yeah, I'll just kind of leave you with anything that you want to share, just finishing off with the podcast.
Yeah, optimism. At the end of the day, I try to be an optimist at heart. And I think that there are solutions that we can follow. Again, you know, around the things that you do every day, you are an artifact of those things, you know, those micro habits, those behaviors. And again, data can be empowering. And so if you have the right data behind this, you can, you know, see where you're at. And even if it looks discouraging, you know, you can still find change and ultimately find improvement.
Awesome. There you have it, guys. Thorin Stevens, thank you so much for joining me on the Luke Mind Power podcast. It was a blessing to talk, connect, and discuss all these things that we talked about. So thank you so much, guys. I hope that you're having an amazing day wherever you're tuning in. Make sure you share this podcast with your friends so more people can become aware of optimizing their health and becoming, most importantly, better versions of themselves. Thanks so much. I'll see you soon.
Thank you, Luke.